Morning. Today's Daf and Sanhedrin is Mem Vav. We are starting today on the Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Hei Amud Beis. The Mishnah is going to speak about the mitzvah of Tolui, of hanging the person who underwent the skila process. So our parak is dedicated to Gnigmar Adin, after the verdict's been come down in a capital case. So the Mishnah went through the entire process of what happens from the time that he leaves the court until the time that he's actually executed. In the previous Mishnah, we actually described the execution, and now we're talking post-execution. So the post-execution procedure is going to be, under certain circumstances, tliya, it's going to be a hanging. It's based on a pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk we're going to be quoting from extensively in the course of this morning. I say extensively, it's one pasuk, but the pasuk we're going to be saying over a couple of times in the course of today's shiur. Let's start with the Mishnah. Rabbi Eliezer says that there is going to be a direct correlation between skila and tliya, meaning anyone who undergoes the skila punishment, the skila execution, is then going to be subject to being hanged afterwards. And the Chachamim say no. It's not true by everyone who undergoes skila, but it's only going to be true by those who were niskal, either because they were Ovid Avodah Zarah, they served idolatry, or Gidov, or they blasphemed the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It is only for those two Isurim and those two executions that a person is going to be subject to Skila, but all other people who are executed, meaning, for example, Chil Shabbos is a Skila penalty. So, according to the Chachamim, the accepted Halacha, so that person is not going to be hanged after he is Niskal. Rabbi Eliezer. According to Rabbi Eliezer, both men and women are going to be hanged after the skila. The only difference, according to Rabbi Eliezer, is the direction they're going to be facing. For the man, he'll be facing the public, and the woman's going to be facing the post. And the Chachamim limit tliya only to the men, not to the women. Rabbi Eliezer notes there is a precedent of someone who was executed by Beis Din and then hanged, and specifically women, and specifically the 80 women in Ashkelon. Now it happens to be that just a short couple days ago in the Daf, on Daf Mem Gimel, so we went through the entirety of Rashi, where Rashi brought down the entire episode of Shimon Meshetach and the witches. And all we need to remember for now, I mean, it'd be nice if we remembered everything, but all we need to remember for now is that the Talmud comes over to Shimon Meshetach, told him about the dream, and told him about the fate of Shimon Meshetach due to the fact that he wasn't judging the women in Ashkelon. So Shimon Meshetach realized right away that he let it go too long, and the story is interesting and elaborate, but to make it very short, he hanged the 80 witches out in Ashkelon. And so the Gemara says, so now Rabbi Eliezer says, how could you argue with me? Shimon Meshetach, who's the Baal HaMesorah, he's one of the Zugos, so he hanged women after the skila. Amru lo, shmonim nashim talav ein danish lam biyamechad. So the Chachamim say in response to Rabbi Eliezer, that case is unprecedented, meaning it does not follow the regular legal system. Because consider, we know that a capital case cannot be judged, two different capital cases cannot be judged in the same day. And meanwhile, 80 capital cases were judged in the same day. So that cannot serve as a precedent because clearly Shimon Meshetach went above the letter of the law in that particular situation, as Shimon Meshetach felt it was necessary. But what you cannot establish is precedent law from that particular case. That case is literally unprecedented. Tana Rabbana, the Gemara, starts off with a discussion of the first point of our Mishnah in terms of who's subject to getting hanged. Tana Rabbana v'humas v'talisa. You put him to death and you hang him. Yachol kol ha-mumsim nitlin tamalam or kikilas alukim talui. So if you look at the pasuk in last week's Parsha, you will see that the Torah says, kilas elokim, the one who cursed Hashem, that person is going to be hanged. So Rabbi Eliezer says it's only going to be subject to the one who receives skila. So in other words, not all the people who are going to be executed are going to be niska, are going to be hanged, but only the people who are subject to the skila penalty are going to be hanged. Now the Chachamim say, right, look at the pasuk again. The pasuk says that it was only subject to the person who blasphemed the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So anything similar to that is the person that's going to be hanged. What's similar to blasphemy? Idolatry. Both of them are kafir beikar. They both deny the existence of Hashem. So deny or reject the existence of Hashem. So the so only those people are going to be hanged. Nobody else. But my kamiflagi, the Gemara says, what's at root of this machlokus over here is Rabbanan Darshi Klal Leprato, Rabbi Elazar Darshi Ribu Miyut. That they're looking at the same pasuk. It's just a question of how to darshan the pasuk and the which methodology is subject to being used. According to Rabbi Eliezer, he uses the methodology of Klal Leprat, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, he uses the methodology of Ribu Miyut, and according to the Chachamim, we use the methodology of Klal Leprat. The Gemara goes on to explain. Rabbanan Darshi Klal Leprat. So the Chachamim use the methodology of Klal Prat, v'hu mas v'talisa, Klal. So first the Torah says in the most general terms that someone is executed and then he is hanged. That is a generality. Ki kilas prat. And then the Torah gives an example. Ihavim mekarvela dadi. Now if these two terms in the Torah were right next to each other, Arminan ein b'chal elamashab prat. So this is a classic example of Klal Prat. And the and as we say every morning before Pesukah de Zimra, Ein shebeklal elamash beprat. That if it's just a klal prat, a standard klal prat, that means that the prat is the definition of the klal, and it doesn't include anything else. Hani and midiach rinilo, and that therefore would only include somebody who was mekal Hashem, someone who blasphemed. Hasha de mechakim adade. But now that they are not directly next to one another, but they are a small distance away from one another. Ani l'rebu yavodesko chavim de damila. So therefore, it gives us an allowance to include, but only those things which are very similar to blasphemy, which is avodah zarah, but nothing else. And that's if you use the methodology of Klal Prat. Rabbi Eliezer, Darshei, Ribu, Miut. And Rabbi Elazar is looking at the exact same pasuk, but using a slightly different methodology in terms of darshaning it, what the Gemara describes as Ribu, Miut. And the Gemara, and we're just simply going to say this, I'm going to explain it by way of the Gemara. Vuhu mazva talisa ribui. So when you look at the first generality, that somebody's executed and then he's hanged, that's a ribui, that's an amplification, meaning it's coming to include everybody. Everybody's executed. Everyone executed. Kikilas miut. And the kilas is a miut. Now, now, let's say they were right next to one another. Okay? So what do I have now? I have ribui and miut. And as Rashi explains here in detail, and I'm saying it succinctly, and I encourage you to go through the Rashi later this morning. When you use ribu imiut, so unlike klal prat, where klal prat, if they were right next to one another, the prat is the definition of the klal. The prat is coming to define the exact parameters. If, however, the methodology you use is ribu imiut, what happens in the miut is that it's not a strict definition, but rather it's an example of what is given in the generality. And by virtue of the fact that it's an example, that means that what I could do is I could look at the example and use that as a model to include other things as well. That's had it been ribui miut. And so therefore, had it been a strict ribui miut, meaning where you have the generality followed immediately by the miut, by the limitation, so then we would have said that it would have applied to blasphemy, it would apply to avodah zarah, because again, it's not a strict definition, it's just an example. But now that they're not right next to each other, so therefore it really allows for even more amplification, and it comes to include anyone who's subject to the skila penalty. Okay, so, and again, I strongly encourage you to look at Rashi, where Rashi explains this in much greater detail, but the idea of the differentiation between using the methodology of Klal Prat versus using the methodology of Ribu Imiut. Okay. So what do we have right now? A machlokas tanaim we saw back in the Mishnah with a better explanation from the Gemara in terms of who is subject to being hanged after they're executed. According to the Chachamim, only Giduf and Avodah Zarah. According to Rabbi Eliezer, anyone who was executed through Skila is subject to the subject to being hanged after being put to death. With the Halacha falls like the Chachamim, it's only limited to Giduf and Avodah Zarah. Ha'ish Tolin and the second discussion, debate of our Mishnah, with the Gemara now is going to discuss, and that is who's subject to being hanged. According to the Chachamim, only men. According to Rabbi Eliezer, men and women. My time with the Rabbanan, the Gemara here goes first and explains the position of the Chachamim. Amar Kav Talisa Osa Osa V'lo Osa. The Torah says you hang him and not her. Rabbi Eliezer Osa V'lo Kesuso. Rabbi Eliezer says no, that's not what the pasuk is coming to exclude. What the Torah says Osa, the Torah means Osa V'lo Kesuso, not with his clothing on. Tosos points out over here, Now you know that for the execution itself, he already was disrobed. He was disrobed prior to the execution. So he already doesn't have clothing on. Why do I need another drusha to tell me that for the hanging he doesn't need to have clothing on? He already was disrobed. Tosha says that without the drusha, I might have thought that what we should do is that we should stone him, disrobe him, stone him, clothe him, and then hang him. So what the drusha is coming to teach us is no, that he remains unclothed even for the hanging as well. Now the Chachamim actually concede that point. So he quotes from another part of that pasuk that if a man has a sin, ish velo isha, Rabbi Elazar hai v'chi yebi ish my darish bay. Now Rabbi Elazar has to contend with that pasuk. So he says for that an exclusion of the ben sora mora. Now ben sora mora niskal v'nidla div Rabbi Elazar. Now the Gemara says, what do you mean exclusion? We happen to know through a brisa that according to Rabbi Eliezer, the Mansur Amora, who is subject to the skila penalty, is going to be hanged after his niskal. Alam Rav Nachman, Rav Yitzchak, Lerabos Mansur Amora. So exactly. So in other words, we need a special drasha to include a Mansur Amora. My time, and Amakra, V'chiyeh B'ish Chet, Ish V'lo Ben. So the Torah says if the man has a Chet, and that excludes a child, Chet Mishal Chato Nerag Yatsa Ben Sora Mora Shal Shum Sofo Nerag. And there's another reason why we should be excluding Ben Sora Mora, and that is the Ben Sora Mora is in fact put to death, but not over his current behavior and not over his current sin, but rather based on the future. It's one of the rare instances in the Torah where the Torah projects what is going to happen into the future and looks at his current behavior, projects into the future, and he's going to be executed based on future, on his future action. Rashi over here quotes the Gemara that we're going to see later in the 8th parak of Sanhedrin. Currently, what is the Ben Sora Mora doing? So he's gluttonous, and he is a bit of an alcoholic. And right now, that's it. Meaning those are the current behaviors that he's exhibiting. However, if we just project down the road, being that he's a glutton, being that he's addicted to alcohol, so what he's going to do later on is he's going to need to feed his habit. So he's going to need to pay for his habit. So he's going to hold people up. He's going to rob people if necessary. He's going to kill people. So it's one of those unusual circumstances where Yara Torah Lesov Dato, we can project the future. We meaning the Torah allows us to project into the future, and therefore he's killed at that young age. So there are two reasons why the Ben Sora Mora should be excluded from the punishment of from the Talui, from being hanged. One, Ish V'lo Ben. Two, he's not killed for his current sin, but for a future sin. So what is this in Halacha referred to as? A double exclusion. A double exclusion is Miyad Achamiyad. And we know, you've been in the daf long enough, you know, have Emir Achamir, Ve'emir Achamir al Rabbos. So once there are two exclusions that exclude him, the double exclusion, much like in math, when you take two negatives and you multiply two negatives, you get a positive. In Drasha, if you have two exclusions comes to do the opposite. It's an inclusion. Okay. Amalam Rabbi Eliezer, Veloshim, and Meshetach, Salonashim, V'chule. Am Rav Chista. Now this is something we quoted earlier, we're quoting it again in today's daf, on Mem Vav, and that is the idea of what are the exact parameters of Beis Din not being able to try multiple cases in a single day. Rav Chista says that the court's ability, or I should say rather inability, the prohibition of a court not to judge multiple cases in a single day is only if they are different cases, different types of cases. However, if it's the same case that's being tried, a court can do that in the same day. And as we learned earlier, the rationale behind it is as follows. Because look, obviously a capital case requires a lot of brain power. And it requires a lot of mental processing. It's exhausting. And what we're concerned about is that if it's two different cases, it therefore will require the judges to think about two different areas of halacha in the same day. And the consequence, of course, being that we're looking at somebody's someone's life is in the balance. So we don't want the Beis Din to have to exhaust their mental ability on two different cases. However, if it's the same case being tried, so Beis Din is, so to say, they're in the Parsha, meaning they're thinking about this particular parsha, and therefore there's an allowance for a basin to try two cases as long as it's based on the same halacha in the same day. So the Gemara says, but wait one second. The Gemara says, yeah, but remember what the Chachamim said back to Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah? Shimon Meshetach tried the 80 witches. Now, presumably, they are the same case, just simply repeated 80 times. And the Chachamim said that was above the letter of the law. That was not within the parameters of the regular legal system. What do you mean? According to Rav Chisda, it should be perfectly allowed. So the Gemara says, okay. So we're going to take Rav Chisda's statement and we're going to redact it, just slightly. If it is two different averas, even though they're similar to one another, that cannot be done by a single basin in a single day. If, however, it is the exact same avera just repeated multiple times, that can be judged by a basin in the same day. And as Rashi over here fills in the blank, what about, again, we're back to our same question. What about Shimon Meshetach and the 80 witches? Isn't that the same case just being repeated again and again? Rashi and Tosfos both on our daf say no. Because even though the witches were all witches, but the witches practiced different types of sorcery, different types of witchcraft. There's Ov, there's Yidoni, there's Chover Chover. Now, it happens to be, you ask me, I don't know the difference between these types, but there are different types of sorcery. The Torah actually describes them in different types of sorcery. Later in the Masechta, if I remember correctly, the Gemara itself is going to go into some detail regarding the differences between these types of sorcery. The point, however, being that even though they are all under the general umbrella of witchcraft, but because they are different types of witchcraft, therefore the court cannot judge them on the same day. But Lu Yitzu, had it been that the exact same Avera being committed by different people, a basin can try those different cases on the same day. The Gemara here quotes a Braisa. This Braisa certainly is difficult for Rav Chisda. The Braisa says that a basin cannot try two cases in the same day, even if it involved an adulterer and an adulteress. Meaning, obviously, two people. That's how it works. Two people involved in adultery. Basin cannot try the two of them in the same day. Each one of them is going to need their own separate day. Now, let's think about it. Based on what we learned together, why not? Basin should be able to try them on the same day. In other words, it's the same Avera, it's the same penalty, so why not try them on the same day? That's a really good question against the opinion of Rav Chisda. So Tirgama Rav Chisda Babas Kona Bo'Allah. So Rav Chisda says, yeah, I know the Braisa, and we could do is we could say about the Braisa that actually there are two different executions that are necessary. For example, the Gemara here is going to give two examples. Example number one, a man has an extramarital affair with a Bas Kohen. We know that a Bas Kohen who's involved in adultery is subject to the Sreifa penalty. The man who engaged with her in the extramarital affair, so he's subject to either going to be Chenek or Skila, depending on her age and marriage status. But he's not subject to Sreifa. So here we have a circumstance in which it's the same Avera, but different penalties. That's why Basin cannot try it on the same day. The Gemara gives another example why in this particular case, it cannot be tried on the same day because it's two different penalties. A most intricate, a most elaborate case, but basically it's the same idea. That in this particular case, the man in question and the woman in question are going to be receiving two different penalties, and as a result of that, cannot be tried on the same day. Quickly, just to explain this case, you have a scenario in which a Bas Kohen was involved in an extramarital affair. She's subject to the Sreifa penalty. Then you have, obviously, the only way she's going to be subject to the penalty is you have the first set of witnesses who testify to the adultery. Then you had a second set of witnesses who say that the first set of witnesses could not be telling the truth because Imanu Ayisim Bamakom Ploni. So now the first set of witnesses are subject to the penalty. Now, whose penalty are they subject to? Remember, they were testifying about adultery of a Bas Kohen. She's receiving Sreifa, but the man in question is not receiving Sreifa. So what are they going to receive? What they're going to be receiving is his penalty, not her penalty. That's based on a drasha. Then what happened is that you had now a third set of witnesses who testify regarding the second set of witnesses. The second set of witnesses are in fact lying. Imanu Ayisa Mamakom Ploni. And now, therefore, the second set of witnesses are going to be receiving the penalty of what the first set of witnesses are going to be receiving. first set of witnesses were looking at chenek. The second set of witnesses now are going to be receiving chenek. But because now we have reinstated the testimony of the first set of witnesses, we have now shown that they were not lying, but they were in fact telling the truth. So therefore, the woman is back on the execution path. So here again, another scenario in which the woman in question is going to be receiving sreifa because she's a bas kohen. The zomameha are going to be receiving the chenek penalty. Okay, again, unlikely scenario, but another case where one avera. Well, it's more than one avera because it's all the lying, all the perjury, but it's all built on the same case. But because they're different penalties, different death penalties, so therefore it cannot be tried by one basin in the same day. Tanya. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar Shamati Shebeis Demakim Onshin Shlom and Atara. So Shimon Meshetach put to death 80 witches, and he did so above the letter of the law, meaning the law demands that they should have been tried on different days. Shimon Meshetach, to make a case of them, judged them all on the same day. And furthermore, he hung them all. He hanged them all after the execution. And again, according to the Chachamim, that's not normally what's to be done. Women are not normally hanged. But again, this was exceptional, and Beis Din has the right and the ability to go above and beyond the letter of the law. And v'lo lavar al divrei Torah, and this is brought to us by Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, v'lo lavar al divrei Torah, and this is not a violation of the Torah, ela kedei lasot siyag l'Torah. In fact, just the opposite. Meaning when Beis Din feels that there is a general laxity and a general attitudinal shortcoming of the Jewish people towards the mitzvahs and the averes of the Torah, so Beis Din basically can, under certain circumstances, basically go above and beyond the letter of the law in order to provide more of a fence around the Torah. The Gemara here cites two incidents where we see clearly that Beis Din went above the letter of the law, a temporary suspension of the law. One episode the Gemara relates is a person's riding a horse on Shabbos during the times of the Greek. Riding a horse on Shabbos is a rabbinic prohibition, not an Isser Torah. They avila basin v'sakluhu, and they brought him to basin and they killed him. They stoned him. Lo mimisharai lekach. Now that's not the appropriate punishment. The appropriate punishment for riding a horse on Shabbos, it's a din derabanan. It's an Isser derabanan makas mardis. Right, the person should be receiving lashes. But over here, however, because of a general laxity of the people, of the Jewish people regarding the averos, so Beis Din felt that this is an appropriate time of a temporary suspension of regular law. And, right, like martial law, for example, right? A temporary suspension of regular law because it's needed, because it's necessary. So here too. Elisha, shat tzrich lakach. Shuv ma'isabad demecha, the Gemara tells a second story. Now a man had relations with his wife, which is a mitzvah, but he did so in the most immodest fashion. It was under the tree outside. So here he was brought to Beis Din, and Beis Din gave him malchus. Now that's not the appropriate punishment in general for such an activity. It was relations with his wife. But because of the gross immodesty that it was done under, so therefore Beis Din felt that they need to punish under these circumstances to basically make a model lesson of this is improper behavior, this is terribly immodest behavior.
How can the Rabbanan give a stricter punishment than the Torah?
Meaning my answer is not going to be, they clearly have the right to do so. Under what, right, under
this is the first case, death.
Right. Correct. Understood. Totally understood. Meaning that the Chachamim have a general mantra of Asusi al Gatara. They are supposed to not only uphold the Torah, but create a fence around the Torah. And their power is such where they can even punish. And I understand, though, in other words, I'm not giving you an adequate answer to your question. Meaning, what's the precedent? What's the basis? Where in the Torah does it say that they have this kind of power? Right, and we're talking about putting people to death. Meaning, often there's a time where it comes to money. Right, I'm just saying another example. When it comes to money, Beis Din has the power of disavowing you from your money. Right, but that's Beis Din Hefker. And the Gemara, when the Gemara cites that, the Gemara cites Psukim. I'll be a Psukim from Navi, but Psukim. Over here, you're asking me about their ability to kill somebody. Now, I'll just simply say we just learned the Gemara that they do have that ability. They do have that right. What's the pasuk that allows it? Off the top of my head, I do not know.
Doesn't Rambam have a pasuk that he relies on in terms of saying that all the Rabbanon are basically the right? Because that pasuk is in that.
Yeah, but it still doesn't properly answer Danny's question. In other words, they're killing somebody. So you're right, yeah, okay. Anyway, but suffice for me to say that they do have that power. In other words, and clearly, I mean, the Gemara is citing it. Okay. Kate's telling us up. Okay, the actual procedure of hanging. A person is stoned to death. And again, let's assume like the Chachamim, under the categories of Giduf and Avodah Zarah. And then afterwards, the Torah says that the person should be hanged. And as you're going to see for the remainder of today's daf, the hanging procedure is both a mitzvah and something that we want to just, we do not want him up there and suspended for any duration of time. So it's a very interesting attitude that we have towards this particular mitzvah, as the Mishnah itself is going to describe, right? The more he's suspended up there, the more he's hanged, the more embarrassing it is for him. The Mishnah will tell us for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, it's something we're supposed to do, but we don't want to do. Or just basically, as quickly as he's hung, that's as quickly as we want to take him down. And the Mishnah here describes in detail. Kate said, "Tell us so." Mishakan is karba aretz va'eitz yotze. So we take a pole, we put the pole in the ground. Now, careful! I don't want to say we plant the pole in the ground, because as we're going to see, we don't bedafka don't want him hanging on a tree, but we take a pole, we stick it in the ground, and then we hang it. And there's a little piece of wood coming off the pole, like a horizontal, and he's hanged. Va'eitz yotze. Now, again, I know the Mishnah uses the word eight tree over here, but it's not tree. Meaning it just simply means a piece of wood is protruding from the pole. Umaki sheyadav zu agav zu. And the hands are tied one over the other. Vitola oso. And he's hanged on the protrution off the pole. Rabbi Yossi Omer, akora muta ala kosa vitola oso kederach shadabachim osim. And according to Rabbi Yossi, the pole is not even put into the ground, but rather, the pole leans against the wall, and it's basically now on a diagonal. And he, the one who was executed through skila, is going to be hanged on the pole, much like a piece of meat is hanging off of a pole. But the pole's not even put into the ground. Umatir no somayat. And as quickly as he's put up on the pole, that's as quickly as he's taken down. V'imlan over alav v'lo sase. If you leave him overnight, so you're in violation of a negative prohibition. Shenem lo salin v'laso ala eitz ki kaborsik barenu. Ki killas Elokim talui. So here's the pasuk which we've been quoting again and again this morning. The Mishnah quotes the pasuk, more of the pasuk. You're not allowed to leave him overnight. You must bury him because killas Elokim talui. Now that expression in the Torah, we're going to be spending a lot of time. The Mishnah itself right now gives a pshat, klummer. Mimnei mazet talui mimnei shabirichas Hashem. Why is he hanged? He's hanged because he blasphemed the Kadosh Baruch Hu. V'nimtza Shem Shemayim Mischalel. And now, the longer that he's up there, Shem Shemayim is going to be Mischalel, it's going to be profane. Because, as Rashi explains, the man was in violation of Giduf, of blasphemy. So, you hang him. And you hang him because the Torah says so. It's a mitzvah from the Torah. But the longer he's up there, people are going to be conversing with one another. You see that? You see that? You see that? What'd he do? What'd he do? And then the conversation is, oh, he did blasphemy. So, it's again, it's an interesting balance over here where, on one hand, the mitzvah of the Torah is to hang him, and presumably, but I'm not saying this is the reason, because I'll simply say we hang him because it's a mitzvah of the Torah, but presumably it's because to make a model lesson of don't behave like this, but at the same time, the longer he's up there, more embarrassing it is to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, take him down immediately. I'm Rabbi Meir B'Shash Adam Mitzvah Shechina Ma'alash and Omeris. Kalani Miroshi, Kalani Mizroai. So Rabbi Meir says that when a person is mitzta'er, the Shekhinah itself also is part and parcel of that suffering. It's like the Shekhinah saying, Kalani Miroshi, Kalani Mizroai. On the Amud base of today's daf, we're going to explain in detail exactly what that expression means. Imken amakom mitzta'er al damam shor reshaim shenishpach. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is suffering so much pain over a Rasha who's put to death. Kavachomer al damam shel tzadikim. Imagine again, we're speaking about feelings and emotions of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kaviyachol. It's not, in other words, it's only for us to try to understand. meaning it's given in human terms so that we can understand. L'shaber za'ozen. Imagine how HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels over the death of tzaddikim, right? The truth of the matter is, it's really a pasuk in Tehillim. Yakar beinei Hashem hamavta l'chasidav. Right? It's difficult for Hashem when the chasidim die. Okay, but and it happens. And the Gemara says, and look, so much pain and suffering over a Russia who was just put to death. Imagine a tzaddik. V'lozu b'van amru ala kol amalans meso over below sase. Now the Gemara says, now the truth of the matter is, it's not just limited to the people who are executed, but anytime somebody dies, and you don't bury right away, but you leave the body overnight, so that's no good, meaning that's a violation. So, however, in general, if let's say you postpone burial because we don't have the aron, we don't have the coffin, we don't have the tachrichin, the burial shrouds, so that you're allowed to suspend the burial. Meaning, if it's lichvodo, if it's for the honor of the deceased, so then you can you can delay, you could postpone burial. Often is the time where you have family members who want to come in for the burial, and the burial is going to be delayed, it's going to be postponed for family members to come in. The argument is that's lichvodo. It's a valid argument. It's a good argument. So, and that falls in line with what we just learned in the Mishnah. V'lo yikovernoso bikvurus avosav. Now, in terms of where the one who is executed is going to be buried, he's not buried in the quote-unquote regular burial plots, and not in his family burial plots. Elishtei bati kvar sayu mesukanim lebezdin. In Bezdin, there were two cemeteries dedicated to the people who were executed. Achaz l'naragim l'nachnachim v'achaz l'niskalim l'nisrafim. Interesting, I cannot not explain to you why this division, but basically two burial spots behind Bezdin. One, for the people who suffered execution of Chenek and Hereg, and a second one who suffered the execution of Skila and Sreifa. Now, again, we see this time and again throughout our Masechta. There's a Machlokas in terms of the pecking order of the Dalamisa's Basin. However, according to everybody, Skila and Sreifa are on a higher level of a more severe death penalty, and Herik and Chenek on a lower level. Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakhama argue in terms of which is one and two, Skila number one or Sreifa number two, or Sreifa number one, Skila number two. But Lechuleam, according to everybody, Skila and Sreifa are in a category, are in a more harsh category than Herik and Chenek. So in terms of the division of the cemeteries, so one cemetery for Skila and Sreifa, and a second cemetery for Herik and Chenek. Why not four cemeteries? I don't know. And then, after burying the executed person in the special cemetery next to the Beis Din, so then, after the decomposition of the flesh, and you're just left with bones, so then you exhume the bones and re-enter the bones into the family burial plot. Now, in terms of the family members, what's expected behavior, and I'm not sure how you legislate this behavior, and I'm not sure if there is any legislation, but what's expected behavior and what is appropriate is that the family members go over to the Dayanim and to the Edim and basically extend Shalom Aleichem to both the judges and the witnesses. Klamar, and the Mishnah says, and that means to say, Sheim b'libein Aleichem, Shedin emes dantem. It's nothing personal between me and you. Meaning, we, the family members, know that you, the judges, and you, the witnesses, were just carrying out the judicial process. And so we don't have any ill regard for any of you. What do you mean? In terms of the family members?
Yes.
I don't know. Alex, it's a fair question. I don't know if the Mishnah over here, this line of the Mishnah is after the reinterment. It sounds like from the Mishnah, I understand what you're saying, because it certainly sounds like from the Mishnah put in this line over here immediately after the reinterment of the bones. But I don't know, meaning it could very well be that this behavior is expected right after the case. It's just that the Mishnah didn't have a better place to put it. It could be. V'lo yumis ablin aval onanim. Now, there was no avelus, meaning if a family member was executed by Beis Din, the family themselves do not go through the process of avelus. The obvious question, why not? Rashi over here writes, well, first let me finish reading the Mishnah, and then I'll read the Rashi. Aval onanim, but they do go through the process of aninus. Right? Aninus is, there's a technical aninus, and then there's a Not so technical on Enos. Well, I'll explain. And in other words, immediately after the death and until the point of the burial, so the Gemara in Brachos describes that the person is an Onin. An Onin meaning that he is not chayv in the mitzvahs in the Torah, still subject to all the Isurim in the Torah, but not chayv in the mitzvahs in the Torah. And the reason behind that is that he needs to dedicate himself to the burial of his family member. It's kind of like the idea of Osik b'mitzvah, potam b'mitzvah, meaning he's currently involved in the burial of his family member, and he should not be focused on any of the other mitzvahs in the Torah.
Okay. But he's not in this case. He's basically taking care of
them. Right. And Onin over here in our Mishnah may not mean that. Onin over here just may refer to just simply the emotional state of having lost a relative. Right? I'll give you another example of what Onin can mean. Onin also can mean that when you're an Onin, you can't eat a carbon. So eating a carbon, you have to be in a state of joy in eating a carbon. A person who just lost a relative on the day that he lost a relative, so is unable to eat a carbon because he's in this morose state, and he's in the sad state of being an onin. So the Mishnah over here, when it says no onin, that he can experience aninus, could just simply be referring to the emotional state of being sad. Meaning, and the Mishnah actually says, because ein aninus ela b'lev, because it's an emotion. And obviously, there's no legislation against an emotion. In fact, it's normal, it's natural. But in terms of avelus, the formal avelus, the family members cannot be misabel. Okay, so let me just explain this. So why not? So Rashi. So Rashi over here writes as follows. It's the first Rashi on the Amud, the last Rashi in the Mishnah. So he writes, I'm reading the Rashi inside. V'loyu misabelim aleihem, kidei shetei bizyonam kapara. This is part of the kapara process regarding the executed person. Meaning, part of his entire execution is there to provide a kapara for him. Meaning, he obviously violated a most heinous crime, and the likes of which deserves, warrants an execution. And part of the kapara, I would say, the main part of the kapara is the actual execution itself. But what Rashi is teaching us is that also part of the kapara is the idea that the family is not going to be sitting shiva. That is obviously serving as a bizayon to the mace, and that is part of providing the kapara. Ela onanim bavad deinze kavod laharog ve'en kapara so nimnemus bekach she'en aninus ela b'lev bavad. The fact that the family is not banned from aninus has nothing to do with the kapara, meaning because that's strictly emotional. But in terms of the formal process of avelus, that he's not going to do. I'm guessing, but you can accept my guess. You can reject my guess. It's fine. But I'm guessing that probably the Gemara never really speaks about Kaddish. Kaddish is an old minhag, but the Gemara itself never really talks about it. But I'm guessing that the family members would say Kaddish. Meaning Rashi tells us that the whole process of not sitting shiva is to provide kapara for the mace. We of course know that part of why we do say Kaddish is to provide kapara for the mace. So if I was guessing, which I am right now, I would say that the family members would say Kaddish because that's providing a kapara, much like not sitting shiva is also providing a kapara for the person. Yes, Ben? Okay. I gave you my best guess. Okay. you can take it or leave it. Tana Rabbanan. We're on the very top of Mem Vav Amud Beis. We're starting with the Gemara. Ilan Emer Chei V'Talisa Yisoh Amar Tolan Oso V'Acher Kach Memisa Noso. I might have thought that in other words, we know two things have to happen to this person who was Megadev, who was Ovid of Arazara. One is that he has to be executed, and two, he has to be hanged. I might have thought that it should be done in the reverse, because anytime you look around and the other kings, and what do they do? First they hang, and then they execute. And sometimes, by the way, the hanging is the execution. But in other words, in our heads, we have hanging like by the neck, which asphyxiates and breaks the neck, and right, but hanging over here means hang by the hands, right? That's what the Mishnah described. So I might have thought first the hanging and then the execution, Tam Lomar, but that's why the Torah tells us very clearly. Vuhumas vitalisa. Memisa noso v'achar kach tolanoso. So first execution, then the hanging. So the Brice over here gives us more details than what we learned in the Mishnah. And that is, in terms of the execution, don't do the execution early in the morning. Remember, we discussed this back in the previous parak. What would happen was, in the event that we're looking for a conviction, we're looking at a conviction. We're not looking for a conviction, but we're looking at a conviction. So we don't do it on the day where the trial began, but we wait a day, and it's done the next day. But now what we're learning together is, don't convict in the early morning. Wait till later in the day. And the reason why is because we're anticipating that he's going to be executed through Skila. And again, this is only limited to blasphemy and Avodah Zarah. We're looking towards a skila. We're then, after the skila, we're looking for a hanging, but at the same time also we want to take him down right away. So, as Rashi over here explains, if we delay the actual execution and the hanging till right before sunset, it will mean that we'll execute, hang, and take him down right away. If, however, we execute him in the morning, so we don't have to really take him down until later that day, and we may forget. I know that's strange, but so, right. So basically, you want the entire process to be done all at the same time. Wait till we get Torah Shkia. So, Echa Koshev Echad Matir, Kedele Kai Mitzvah Taliyah. One person ties, the other person unties. Rashi describes this to me, meaning all this in one shot. Meaning tie him up, but immediately untie him. So that we do the Mitzvah of Taliyah, and at the same time, we take him down right away.
It's not the witness of time you are.
I don't think so. There's no mention of that here in the Gemara. It seems not. Tanu Rabbanan. H. Shamei ani bein betosh bein mechubar. Now we're talking about the pole that he's being hanged on. The Torah describes it as an eitz. I might have thought like a tree, like plant in the ground. The Gemara says no. Tamu lomar ki kavur. Mishen mechusar elakfura. He's going to go straight from the hanging to burial. Yatzeh shemechusar kitzitza ukvura. If he was hanged on a tree, that would mean that we would have to take him down from the tree, cut down the tree, and bury him. Remember, we learned just yesterday that anything involved in his execution is also have to be buried with him. So if it was a tree, we would have to cut down the tree, and that's too much of an activity between him being taken down and the kvura. Rabbi Yossi, Amar Mishena Mechusa Ela Kvura Yatzeh Zeh Shemechusa Tlisha Kvura. Now, according to Rabbi Yossi, remember, he described the pole's not even put in the ground. The poles just lean against the wall, and that way you hang him like, and I say this only because I'm using the Mishnah's language, you hang him like a piece of meat, and then you take him down. The pole's not even in the ground, and according to Rav Yossi, that's what we want. We want the pole to basically just come right down with him. So, V'rabbanan Tlisha Lav Klami. Now, the Chachamim will say, in respect to Rav Yossi's position, if all we did was just stick the pole in the ground, and we're just pulling the pole up, that's not a terribly big deal. And that would be fine. Okay. Klamer mimnei mazeh, talim mimnei shabirech. Tanya. The Gemara here quotes a brisa. Omer Meir mashal lamad avadam l'shnei achim ta'omim. Bir achas. We are now giving an analogy, a mashal, to describe what it is when somebody is hanged. So, it's like two identical twin brothers. Echam inu melech ve'echad yotzeh l'lisios. Who went in two totally different directions in life. One becomes the king, and the other is a bandit. Now, the bandit was caught. The bandit was sentenced to the death penalty. And now the bandit is being hanged. Now, when people see that this bandit is hanged on the gallows, people are looking at him. He looks just like the king. And people are saying, hey, look at that. The king is being hanged. So, tziva amelch variduhu. So the king says, okay, quickly, take him down. Okay, that's the mashal. The nimshal, so we are tzelem elokim. Again, to the best of our understanding, we are in the image of Hashem. So every time that somebody sees a human being hanged, so kaviyachol, to the best of our understanding, so that's like Hashem being hanged in the nimshal. And so therefore Hashem says, hang him, and then Hashem says, take him down right away. Okay. Amar Rav Meir, my mashma. Now, we said, Kikilas elokim talui, and Reb Meir back in the Mishnah told us it's like kalani merashi kalani mizra'ah. What does that expression mean? The Gemara now debates exactly what that expression means. My mashma, Amar Rabbi Kamanda Amar kal leis. I am not light. Well, meaning a euphemism. I'm heavy, right? I'm weighted down. And that's what Hashem's saying, meaning right. This is also pressing upon me. So Amar le Rava im kein kaved alai rashi kaved alai zroa mi baile. Well, if that's what it meant, the better way the Mishnah would have expressed it was that my head is heavy, my arms are heavy. Elam Rav Kaman Damar Kili Alma. The world is upon me, meaning the pressures of the world are upon me. That's what it means. So Haimi Bai Lelugufa. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. What are we doing darshing this pasuk? Don't we need the pasuk to teach us what we learned in the beginning of today's shir? That the only one subject to being hanged is only the one who committed blasphemy. And so the word kilalas comes from the person who cursed Hashem. So im came name akra mikalal, my kilalas. So if that was the intent of the Torah would have and should have used the expression of mikalal. By virtue of the fact that the Torah uses the word kilalas, is coming to teach me, well, as we're going to see in just a moment, both points. Both that it applies to the mikalal, and also this idea that it is demeaning to Hashem for the person to be suspended there and take him down right away. Ve'ema kulei la'achu da'asa, the Gemara says, well, maybe it's just there to teach me the second idea, that it's demeaning to Hashem, and therefore take him down right away. So imkein ne'makra kalas, my kilash ma'minatarti. We're learning out both points. That the one who is hanged is the megadef, and on top of that, take him down right away. V'lo zubavad. Am Rav Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochanan lamalan es meso shover alav b'lo sase. The general prohibition of not pushing off the burial, meaning beyond the person being executed, in general, not pushing off a burial. And if somebody does so, he's in violation of a negative prohibition of the Torah. Tamalama ki kaborsik berenu. It's based on the fact that the Torah says bury him right away. Meaning, by virtue of the fact that the Torah tells us that we must bury the executed person right away, that speaks to the general notion that burial should occur right away and we should not delay the burial. Mikan lamalas meso shorver below sase. Somebody who has a family member to bury must do so as quickly as possible. And failure to do so is a violation of a negative prohibition. Igadam, the Gemara gives now a different version of the above discussion. I'm Rav Yochanan Mishum, Rav Shimon ben Yochanan Remez, look for him in the Torah, Minayan. Where is an allusion to burial, the mitzvah of burial in the Torah? Tamalama kikabortik burna, mikan remez, look for him in the Torah. Now in the second version, it's basically the same point, but it accentuates the positive as opposed to the negative. In the first version, it was that if you don't bury him right away, you're in violation of a lo sase. In the second version, it's a focus on the positive commandment to bury the person. I'm Ali Shvor Makala Rav Chama Kvurim in the Torah, Minayan. Shvor Malka, a non-Jewish king, asks Rav Chama, where in the Torah do we have this idea that you have to bury? Where is it explicit in the Torah? So, V'lo Amrle V'lo Midi. Rav Chama was asked a question. Rav Chama did not give an answer. Shvor Malka. Amar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Imsar Alma B'yada Titiv Shai. Now, what you just did by not giving an answer is that you looked foolish. And you made us all look foolish. Meaning he's asking a question. You got to give him an answer. So, Ibai le lamemer ki kabur. Meaning, what about the pasuk we just quoted? The lave le aron. He would have just simply said no. Kabur just simply makes a coffin. Make a coffin. But in other words, basically what Rav Chama is going to say in this entire dialogue is, I know my audience. Meaning, I know what Shvor Malka would accept as an answer, and I know what he would reject as an answer. And so when he's asking me a question, it's not just a question that exists in a vacuum. Meaning, and in general, good advice for me. Good advice for all of us. Meaning when someone asks you a question, understand the person asking you the question, understand the context, and know your audience. And that's exactly what Rav Chama did over here. He knew his audience. And now he's explaining to Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, I know all the answers I'm going to give him, and I know everything he's going to reject. Let's start this right now, and we'll continue tomorrow. So, Ki Kavor Talam V'Lei Arad. He would have just simply said, make an Arad. Tik Barenu. So, Lo Mashmalei. Hey, Tik Barenu, Shvor Malka would just rejected that as well. That doesn't mean burial. Okay, V'neim amid the Ikbar Tzadike. Look at all the Tzadikim who are getting buried. Minag Ba'ama. Shvor Malka would say, yeah, but that's just your minog. I want to know where the source is in the Torah. Mid the Kavri HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. What do you mean? Hashem buried Moshe. So, Lo Lishonim in Minaga. Yeah, Hashem also follows Minhagim. It's a minog. Hashem follows Minhagim. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tashma, tomorrow we'll pick it up. More of the dialogue between Rav Chama and Shvor Malka, and it's not even the dialogue. This is all the answers that Rav Chama thought and didn't even propose to Shvor Malka because he knew Shvor Malka would reject it.